this incident follows on from the wedding feast at Cana, where Jesus had changed water into wine. And then he and his disciples go and visit family in Capernaum for a few days. And that was about 12 miles away on the north shore of Galilee. And then they go to Jerusalem for the Passover, according to John's Gospel. But there's a problem. And the problem is that in all the other Gospels, and like I said, all of them have this incident, so it's considered important, Jesus clears the temple just before he's arrested in Matthew, Mark and Luke. I don't know if you remember that. Just before he's arrested and crucified, he goes in and clears the temple. Whereas here, it's at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. The other thing is, all the other Gospels only mention Jesus going to Jerusalem for the Passover once, whereas here, in John's Gospel, he goes three times. So, why is there a difference, and is there any contradiction? Well, some commentators believe that there were actually two separate events. And so John is describing one at the beginning and the other's describing one at the end. Others think it's extremely unlikely. So you pay your money, take your choice, as it were. But the thing is, John's Gospel has a different aim. John's purpose in writing his Gospel isn't to give a chronological biography like the other three Gospels who concentrate on Jesus' Galilean ministry. The aim that John has is to show that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. And the cleansing of the temple is a fulfillment of Malachi's prophecy, which we read. So I think what is happening is that John's setting out at the very beginning, or near the beginning of his gospel, to say, here is the long-awaited Messiah. He's come to cleanse the temple, open the door to God. Here is the one who was prophesied about. This is the Son of God, the Messiah. So we come to the cleansing itself. Now, imagine that you are one of the disciples going with Jesus to celebrate the Passover in Jerusalem. You'd been with him at the wedding in Cana and were amazed at this miracle of water being turned into wine. Thought, wow, life's going to be exciting, isn't it? What's Jesus going to do next? Then you go and have a little break, as it were. Go and visit his family and presumably have a nice time with them. Everything's going great. Then you go up to Jerusalem and you arrive at the temple. How embarrassing. Don't you think it must have been really embarrassing for the disciples? I mean, where did they put themselves? You don't hear about the disciples here, do you? I wonder if they were hiding away in the corner. What's he doing? What's Jesus doing here? This isn't like the Jesus we've known so far. He's so angry. We've never seen him angry like this as he goes and overturns the tables in the temple court. And it's only later, when they come to realise certain things about these prophecies, they realise that what is happening is that he is fulfilling prophecy. So why was Jesus so angry? Well, every male living within 15 miles of Jerusalem had a duty to attend Passover. But a lot more went to the Passover. In fact, people came from so far and wide that they estimate that there may have been over 2 million people who went to the Passover feast. And all of those who were over 19 had to pay a temple tax, which was worth about 2 days' wages. But the thing was, it had to be paid in Galilean shekels, in other words, Jewish coins. Other currencies were foreign and therefore unclean. And the ones who changed money made huge profits from changing the money. And so all these pilgrims who come from a huge distance were being fleeced at an exorbitant rate. And it was all being done in the name of religion. Then there were the sellers of oxen and sheep and doves for the sacrifices. And all of the animals had to be perfect, unblemished. And there were inspectors appointed to examine the animals. And if they'd been bought outside the temple, they would most likely be rejected. Of course, the animals inside were exorbitantly priced. So again, there was barefaced extortion, all in the name of religion. And in the other three Gospels, Matthew, Mark and Luke, we discover a further reason. Because in Matthew and Luke, Jesus says, "My house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers." And in Mark, he adds a few more words. He says, "My house shall be called a house of prayer for the nations, but you have made it a den of robbers." So not only was God's house being desecrated, but all this was going on in the court of the Gentiles. Now, the court of the Gentiles, this was the only place where they were allowed. They weren't allowed to go any further. Everything else was barred to them. And so for them, it was the only place they could go to pray. But how could they go and pray when all this rabble was in there, all this selling and cheating going on? And Jesus is angry because he's angry at anyone who makes it difficult for any seeker to meet with God. Anyone who stands in the way of someone meeting with God. And later, the disciples too remember the verse from Psalm 69:9, if you read the footnote, the number, where it says, "Zeal for your house consumes me." Zeal for your house consumes me. So they remembered that as well. So what can we take from this story of the cleansing of the temple? First question is, how do we regard Jesus? Some people in certain hymns, we have Jesus meek and mild, don't we? But this is definitely not a Jesus meek and mild. We have to remember that God becomes angry. He's angry with all sin and wants it dealt with. At Passover, every Jewish household spent the days before meticulously going through the house, removing any yeast or any other substance which would cause fermentation. And they would cleanse every such thing from their home. And I wonder if Jesus had that picture in his mind too. But it's also, you see, a picture of what God, through the Holy Spirit, wants to do with our lives. He wants to cleanse us from all our sin and make us more like Christ. There's a cleansing going on. The other thing is, anger is not always a sin. There is a righteous anger, and this is a righteous anger which Jesus shows. Paul wrote to the Ephesians 4:26, he said, "In your anger, do not sin." So just proving that we can be angry and not sin. And I wonder, does our anger at the injustice that goes on in the world, does it lead to zeal, like the zeal which Christ showed? Are we really zealous for God's truth and for his church? Are we zealous for the plight of the poor worldwide, for the denial of rights, for racial discrimination, for the homeless, street children, victims of physical, emotional violence, unborn abortions? There's so many things that we can get angry about, but it's no good just being angry. It needs to lead to action. You know, do we stand up? Do we write? Do we sign petitions? Various things that we can do. And then in verses 18 and 19, in response to the Jews demanding a miracle to prove his authority for what he's done, Jesus replies, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." Now Jesus knew that before too long the temple building would be destroyed. And of course it did happen in 70 AD. But it was only later, after the resurrection, that the disciples realized he'd been talking about his body, himself. There was going to be no need for an elaborate man-made temple with sacrifices and ritual anymore. All of that was ending. Jesus was going to introduce a new age. And because of the resurrection, we can know the presence of the living Christ, the living risen Christ, wherever we are, isn't it? The whole world becomes the temple. The temple was the place you went to meet God. But we don't need to come to church to meet God. We can meet him wherever we want, can't we? And we can approach God directly instead of through all these elaborate sacrifices because of Christ's self-sacrifice, wherever and whenever we want. And all of us who accept Christ's sacrifice for ourselves then become part of his body, and to him he dwells within us by his Spirit. And our bodies become the temples of the Holy Spirit. This is what they're described as. Paul writes to the Corinthians, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, who you have received from God?" But just as Christ cleansed the temple, God doesn't leave us, you know, the way we were. We know that he's loving, that he's patient, and that he's forgiving. But it still means that he won't let us get away with wrongful habits in time. Just like the Pharisees, our outward actions may look good, but our hidden sinful habits do need to be dealt with. And remember the final words of this chapter, which surprised Dorothy because she hadn't realised that they were there. Jesus knew what was in a man. And I think we can say Jesus knew what was in a woman as well. And so that means that he knows what goes on inside us. And he wants to cleanse us from those hidden things as well. So what we're going to do now is sing a prayer, because the next hymn is a prayer, 475.
Purify, purify my heart is this prayer which I'm sure we do all make as we come and approach the communion table, but it's nice to do it in this form today. So it's 475.